Hello, loyal listeners, and welcome to the 83rd episode of the Big Planet Comics Podcast.
The episode that was never meant to be.
Welcome, disloyal listeners who are just joining us for the first time.
I don't know. Last week we said we weren't going to do one this week.
Oh, that's true. I actually thought about that today when I was reading a bunch of comics. I was like, I could be on Tumblr right now.
Jared tricked you.
Kevin could be on Tumblr right now because my name's Kevin.
I'm Nick.
Not Kevin. Could be called Jared.
Yeah, that's true. You could be.
He's called not Kevin.
But you're not.
No,
you definitely are. As always, you can listen to this podcast right the way you're doing it.
Well done, everybody.
Yeah.
And success.
You can follow us on all the other things at Big Planet Comics on Twitter.
At Big Planet Comics without the at after Facebook.com/.
Yes.
What?
Slash. Forward slash.
I believe it's backslash.
Backslash. Is it?
Well, I don't remember.
Try both. One will work.
Indeed. I read a lot of books about kitchens today, you guys. we're going to talk about those later. But what have you guys been, what's been going on with you? What have you been doing? What's been going on?
Most importantly, I think, is that I finally saw Star Trek.
Yeah, Star Trek.
Star Trek.
I need some Star Trek music.
You do.
Wait, I've got this sound effect I'm going to press right now. Make it so.
Make it so.
Play it again.
Make it so.
Star Trek 2, The Wrath of Cumberbatch.
Indeed.
Cumberbatch?
Cucumber Patch.
Cucumber Patch.
Yep.
Cumberbooch.
Eggs Benedict Cucumber Patch.
Isn't he German?
Cumberbooch? Maybe.
Or is he Dutch?
Well, it's an A.
I'm pretty sure he's British.
If he's Dutch, then it's Cumberbatch.
And we lost all our Netherlands.
Our Dutch listeners,
sorry.
I apologize.
That was Kevin. It was not in any way preserved or sent. Yeah.
So did you like it, Star Trek 2?
Nope.
What?
Yep.
Really?
Yep. Cool. I was expecting some troubles with this conversation.
Oh, why? Why?
There was some lens flare going on.
But did you like Star Trek 1?
I did.
There was much less lens flare in Star Trek 2.
Which is interesting, because I definitely noticed it more this time. There was the inevitable filtering of, how is Star Wars going to look going on, which was kind of weird. But on the whole, I feel like it was retreading too much old territory, and I didn't really care about what happened, and all the dialogue seemed to be like, remember when they say this catchphrase? No other dialogue. Catchphrase! No other dialogue.
Nah, I can see that.
Those are my complaints. Just those few.
I liked it, though. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I had
fun watching it. There were good action scenes. I thought that the story was spread out among more characters this time. It wasn't just concentrated on, like, two people.
That's right. True.
And, I enjoyed it. And I thought Benedict Cumberbatch was really, really good.
I thought he was good, great. But then again, I was doing some comparing to the old versions and...
Oh, see? I was not doing that.
It was in my head, too. I don't even know if that's an honest thing. I was just kind of like, there's more crazy, like, dialogue and Moby Dick quotes and...
I mean, one thing I'll say about these new Star Trek movies is they're not as sort of philosophical as the old things.
Yeah.
But I also think Star Trek isn't necessarily a thing that lends itself very well to the movie format. So you have to do some things to make it work. And I feel like J.J. Abrams, in the immortal words of Tim Gunn... Tim Gunn?
Tim Gunn.
He maked it work. He did it.
Did it.
Isn't that what Tim Gunn says? He's like, do it.
Get her, dude.
Just shut up and do it. It sounds like you had a terrible time if that's the only thing you did.
I guess so.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Sorry.
Do I have like a...
Oh.
Sad. It is sad. Now it's happy again.
Yeah. What have you guys been doing? That's awesome.
What have you been doing, Nick? What's been going on?
I've been watching a lot of Arrested Development.
Oh, yeah. Did you finally catch up? You didn't watch the new episodes yet, right?
No. Well, see, I started from the beginning because I watched all the first season when it aired and most of the second one, and then at some point I fell off, so I hadn't seen, like, the last season or all of it or part of it.
How many seasons were there? Three?
Three. Yeah. So I rewatched it all, and then I finished it today, and I watched the first episode of the new season. the 8 years later season.
You did. It's weird.
It's been eight years? Oh, wait. Is it actually 8 years since the show ended or 8 years in, like, show time?
Both.
Really?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to watch a little more to, like, get the feel of it. But I feel like it's a little more, it's a bigger show. It feels like, even though all the cast aren't on all the episodes, it feels like there's, like, one giant story being told, as opposed to like
there is
a more episodic yeah. kind of thing going on.
It's cool though, because sometimes when you can tell they're not in the same room, they just use green screen and put them together, and it looks really terrible.
Oh, really? I haven't seen that happen yet.
Yeah, it happens. It's weird, but it's still fun.
Yeah, it's still really fun.
Yeah, yeah.
There's at least one thing that cracked me up on.
Did it involve a banana stand?
No, I haven't. I only watched the first episode. I didn't see the banana stand yet.
I don't know. I haven't seen any.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing too. I watched a bunch of episodes of that. Had a little barbecue.
Oh yeah.
Played some frisbee.
There's a holiday for some people. Yeah. I'm like us.
I went to actually. I forgot about that.
I went to barbecue every day.
I went to like three barbecues. I was gonna go to a fourth one, but I didn't because it was too far away.
Also, I discovered I love Bud Light Lime Strawberritas.
Oh gosh!
You pour them over ice. It's malt liquor. Tastes like Jolly Ranchers. It's really, really good.
Wow.
Yeah, I had some. They tasted all right. They were really sweet. But the next day, I was dying.
Well, I had one right before this podcast.
Too much sugar.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of sugar. So
that's the official Red Bull.
There's a lime one. There's a strawberry one. The strawberry one's better.
Good.
You heard it here, folks. Oh, jeez.
What was that? That was the sound of that was margarita.
Some of my sound effects are crazy. I don't even know what they do, but that one was just like an explosion, I guess. Anyway. So you guys want to do some news? Let's do it.
Sure.
Yes. All right. This just in. Paul Jenkins goes exclusive with Boom Studios.
Yeah. With Boom. With Brain Da Boom.
Let's go. It's got an exclamation there. So I is that how you pronounce it?
Boom. Yeah. Boom. You're like, Paul. It's Paul Jenkins goes exclusive with a Boom Studios.
Shake the room.
Sorry for everybody's ears if that was loud.
It was.
Yeah, so this, I thought this was interesting. He said the big two have removed their focus away from the creators and towards the maintenance of the characters.
Which is true.
Which is true.
Always been true.
Yeah, but he also said there's like, some of the stuff in the statement was really weird. He's like, there's no creativity in it anymore. Hmm. And like, it's not like when I was doing stuff that was great.
Right.
He was talking about Sentry and Inhumans, which are both fantastic.
That's true.
But then he was also talking about his run with like Buckingham and Ramos on Spider-Man, right, which was fine, but it was very, you know, generic. Kind of. And, you know, there's been tons of good stuff coming out.
He just must be bitter.
At least from Marvel.
They didn't, like, hire him to write a book or anything.
Yeah, yeah. But it'll hopefully be interesting.
What's cool for him to
do? What's he done so far? He did Deathmatch with them, right?
He did Deathmatch, yeah, which is okay.
Okay, you like it, right, Jared?
Yeah, it's good.
You still read it?
Nope.
I still read it.
There you go.
It's mostly just all right.
I love the art.
Yeah, the art's great.
It's like that kind of weird... like everything's like stippled too much, like Juan Jose Reed.
Yeah.
Carlos Magno, isn't that the guy who does it?
Something like that.
Magno.
I don't know. Is it Magno or Magno?
Magno
Supreme.
Yeah, so we'll see what comes out of that. I don't know. Paul Jenkins hasn't really done much recently.
He's done a bunch of things, just nothing great.
There you go. You heard it here, Paul Jenkins.
Yep. I love his old stuff, but I mean, I can't really think of anything recently that I really liked.
Inhumans? Century?
Yeah, those.
Yeah, 15 years ago.
Yep. Oh, whatever.
Oh, he also did Fairy Quest for Boom.
Yeah, that was
which
right
I believe idea. We talked about.
We did.
All right. On another news.
Yes.
Better news.
Free Comic Book Day 2013 drew a record 1.2 million fans. 100 million fans.
How many?
What's happening? 1.2 million.
So
what's the U.S. population? Like 400 million now?
It's 1.2 million.
It's 1.2 million. It was everybody. Yeah, that sounds about right. Is it that high? That seems a little high.
It's definitely over 300 now.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's say 400.
Wait,
and what do they estimate the American comic book reading population is? Like 0.5% or 0.05%?
Yeah,
it's a really small.
It's even less than that, really.
Yeah.
But not everybody came out. I mean the core comic reading base is something like 250,000 people.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. They all brought three friends.
Thanks for listening. This is going to be our last episode. So they said 1.2 million fans went to 2,000 participating comic shops and picked up 4.6 million free comics.
Wow.
Which means a lot of stores were giving out only four comics.
Three.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or probably three and a half.
We're giving out one, probably.
Yeah. we gave out.
Sure, not like 50.
As many as you want. Just only one of each, please.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And bring them up to the counter. We need to make sure you're not stealing anything.
Yes, because there's been some confusion.
All the Big Planet comics together gave out about 1 million of those.
Yeah, well, one million of those cups. I don't know if we talked about this after Free Comic Book Day, but all the Marvel comics right now have, like, free digital copy on the cover. Yeah. And so everybody was like, oh, these are all free.
Yeah. No, they started to change that. It's now, like, complimentary digital copy. It's literally something that I'm, like, that's smarter.
Because people are just like, hey, every day is Free Comic Book Day.
Yeah. I'm like, yep. Did you notice that, you know, all of these comics say free?
Yep.
Yeah. So, success. It's always a success.
It was success.
Sorry. It's the Strawberry Rita talking.
You can say Strawberry Rita. You can't say success.
Yeah.
Impressive.
I came out of... into this world saying Strawberry Rita.
That's true. And finally, you're like, destiny's been fulfilled.
I'm like Nostra Drunk Miss.
That's it for news.
That's all. Oh, yeah, we don't play that again at the end.
I'm sure there was other stuff.
I'm sure there was. Yeah.
Let's do some questions.
A little sad bit of news that's sort of related to Big Planet Comics.
It's true.
It's the writer Jack Vance died.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, so he passed, I believe, on Monday or so. And he was close to 100 years old, which is amazing. He was writing almost up until the last few years, and then he just put out, like, a jazz album a couple of years ago. So just, like,
going
all the way.
He was born, like, 1919, I think.
Yes.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he is, I would say, immensely influential on fantasy and science fiction, not least of which for the Dying Earth series, which invented such thing as, like, Kugel the Unworthy. So anytime you hear, like, Gandalf the Grey or something like that, these kind of ideas often came from him, including such things as casting a magic missile, which you then forget, i.e. used in Dungeons & Dragons, all taken from his books. Importantly for us, he had a book called Big Planet, which is about a big planet, strangely enough. It's like just a huge, huge planet, which takes, like, you know, months to travel across, and a crew crash lands on it. And it's a good, fun adventure thing. And Joel Pollack, founder of Big Planet Comics, wrote to Mr. Vance and said, I like the name of that book. I want to do a comic book store. Can I use your name? And he said, sure.
Which is awesome.
So officially sanctioned by the Jack Vance as Big Planet Comics.
Pretty sweet.
And he also wrote Moon Moth, which is talked about the graphic novel adaptation of that.
Which is awesome.
Really good.
Yeah.
They did the Shy series. I don't even know how to pronounce it. T-S-C-H-I-A-I.
It's pronounced Strawberry Rita.
Strawberry Rita series about a...
It's a very successful book.
Like, space scout pilot who crash lands on an alien world and has to escape just using his bare wits. And it's one of my favorite books of all time.
So go check out a Jack Vance book.
They're all good.
Sure. Yeah. Go to your local library.
Yeah.
It's probably closed, but just go steal it off the internet.
There you go.
Don't get it confused with Jim Vance.
Yeah, don't read any Jim Vance books. Wait, or Bob Vance from Bob Vance Refrigeration. Okay, cool. Well, we've got a bunch of questions this week.
We do.
People felt sorry for us because we never had any questions.
Yeah.
And they sent us too many.
So let's start answering all of them. Let's do this. Question number one of 100 comes from David French, and he says, with the success of Brian K. Vaughan's Private Eye, what other online comics would you recommend? A few I follow, JL8, which is a comic about the JLA when they're little kids, right?
Yeah.
Bottom of the Ninth, which is a comic about baseball, and Supernormal Step, which is kind of like the Step Up movies, but with monsters. That's not true. I just made that last one up. I do not know what that is about.
I was like, that sounds great.
It's about staircase installers.
From the other side.
There you go.
And then it says, keep up the good work and more air horn.
Thanks.
How much more do you need? Okay. I think we've talked about online comics a little bit in here before. We're so surrounded by comics that we're kind of the least experts on online comics, I feel like, in a way.
Yeah.
Because we just have stuff to read all the time, so we don't, like, you know, when we're bored at work, we don't read comics online.
I currently only read one online comic. Well, other than Private Eye, I read Kid Cobbler.
Does that count as an inside joke? That's two D's, two B's. So Nick reads the comic that I write and Coleman Engel draws.
I read that as well.
Yeah. It's only got three pages, but you guys should definitely check it out.
Take it off.
That's kidcobbler.com. Two D's and two B's. Please please follow our Tumblr.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that really the only other one you read? Well, Nick does. I'm going to put pressure on
him. Oh, yeah.
Not really.
And Nick does
his own.
He does an autobiographical comic called...
Junk Punk Down.
You know, real American Euro. Yeah. And it's really, really good. And it is. Maybe after me saying that, he's going to draw some more pages of it.
Well, I hear he's had a recent energy boost to maybe redirecting his creative focus.
Yeah, he's been drinking strawberry Ritas. He's going to be a real successful author. It's a pity big deal. What about you, Jared? What are you reading?
The Order of the Stick. Still one of my favorite on long-running fantasy.
That still comes out?
Yeah. He broke his hand, too, or some broke his thumb, whatever.
But you can't tell.
No, he took a long break, but yeah. Ménage à Trois, which is a very saucy take on the Archie style of drama.
It's about a foursome.
It is eventually.
Oh, is it?
Oh, boy.
No.
That's confusing.
It is. What else did I read? Goblins, which is not the best drawn comic, but
Is that the one about Warhammer?
No. That's Turn Signals on a Land Raider, which unfortunately stopped, but that's a great one.
That comic had really bad art, but was actually pretty funny.
Yeah, it was hilarious. One which I can't tell you about, but if you come in the store and you're over 18, I'll tell you about.
Come on.
That's the only comics I read.
Yeah, it's true. Gosh, what else is... Earthworld, which is another good online one. A fantasy, like a guy gets sucked into a fantasy world. I don't know. What else you got, Kevin?
I read all the online Playboy comics.
I read like a lot of... I like a lot of artists just do like little strips here and there, and I like stuff by them. But one I really like is called Super Mutant Magic Academy, which is by Jillian Tamaki, and it's kind of like
that's really good.
It's kind of like a parody of stuff like Harry Potter, and it's really funny. And then there's another one by Madeline Flores that I like a lot called Help Us, Great Warrior, which is like
it's so funny.
It's so funny, yeah. It's like a fantasy thing with this like cute little weird blobby girl, and it's, you know, it's just like gag strips, but they're really, really funny. And those are kind of the only two. I used to read a thing called Multiplex for like a long time, which was about that worked in a movie theater, but I don't know if that's even coming out anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
There was an interesting article that just came out, I think on BuzzFeed.com last week, which was like 42 essential online comics. And io9.com also does a weekly, I think Saturday or Sunday, like online comic of the week, and all those are really good. I read one on from the BuzzFeed one called Eighth Grade, which is literally just about kids in eighth grade and how, you know, dramatically awful it is, and it was amazing. And I wrote the guy saying, like, this is the best thing ever, and he's like, and literally I went to his Tumblr after that, and 2 days before he's like, yeah, so I'm going to stop doing eighth grade. I'm going to move on to other projects. I was like, aww. But it's great. Anyway, you should read that one. And he's got a bunch of other ones up that are really good.
Yeah, The Beat also just did a thing like 24 hours of webcomics, and she spotlighted a bunch of comics. So this is probably another one checking out. Also, Emily Carroll does a ton of webcomics. They're all kind of short stories, but her stuff is awesome. Yeah. So webcomics, you guys.
Yeah.
Don't read them. Come buy them.
Most of the ones we just said do have collections. So yeah, if you love the paper, we'll sell you the paper.
Or we're going to starve to death. All right. Up next, we got a thing from Aaron Myers. A question. Just a thing from Aaron Myers. Mm-hmm. He says, thanks for the shout out on the podcast. Happy face. This one is a colon, a dash, and a capital D. And Logan has more hair than Professor X, he says right now, assuming that his baby's going to go bald soon. This week is a little busy. Next week, I'll get back on track. But here's a question. First comic you would read to your newborn child. Or what is the first comic you would read to your newborn child?
Got it. Hard boiled.
What to do when your dad abandons you. I don't know. What, you know, comics, there aren't a lot of comics that are really aimed for very, very little kids. So you could read them, like, from hell.
Right.
Or, you know, just whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, if it's a newborn, they're not going to remember it. Yeah.
Green River Killer.
But say, like, what are some good comics for really, really young readers? Owly is a good one.
That's true. There's some good.
Owly's pretty great.
Some of the Toon Book stuff that's been coming out, like Little Mouse from Jeff Smith, or Otto's Orange Day by Frank Camuso. The recent Sketch Monster books were fun.
Those are all good choices.
Yeah.
One of my first ones, the first one I read was Tintin, which unfortunately I tried to recreate that with my friend's kids. And he called me up. He's like, thanks for giving my daughter that Tintin comic. I just had to explain to her what heroin was.
Like, thanks for pouring bleach on my black dog. You're like, I just wanted to be more realistic. I don't know. None of us know anything about
Tintin.
Spider-Man.
Tan-Tan.
I probably would give him some kind of Spider-Man comic.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Or her.
Tiny Titans.
Tiny Titans.
Nah.
No.
Nah. Nah, I'd give her Tiny Titans.
Superman Family
speaking
Adventures.
Speaking of Tiny Titans, did you guys see that there's
the Hellboy
like a,
thing?
Yeah, like a tiny Hellboy.
It looks great.
Called,
yeah, it looks like fun.
Is that a new one coming out?
Yeah, yeah. By,
it's all
by,
them, yeah.
By Franco and Art Baltazar. It should be good.
Sweet.
All right, up next, thank you for the question, Aaron Myers, and congratulations on having a baby.
Well done.
Up next, we got a question from AJ Nova. AJ says...
BJ
Novak. What do you guys think is the most humorless, overly dramatic, being too serious comic out there?
I definitely know it's DC.
I was about to say, probably from DC.
Probably from DC. Let's narrow it down. That narrows us down to 52 books.
No, not 43. Yeah. I think we narrowed that down last week.
Yeah, gosh. Katana? That one's pretty humorless.
It doesn't come out anymore, but Blackhawks was, like, the worst.
Oh, deadly serious.
Yeah.
Justice League is way too serious, I feel.
Yeah.
It's definitely way... Like, Justice League and Justice League of America are way, way, way too serious. I don't know. They have, like, no jokes in them whatsoever.
And when they do, they just don't hit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Funny. Oh boy, what else? What do you got?
I would say Savage Hawkman, but that was hilarious in a different way.
Yeah, you know, I think we're just going to say DC stuff. I can't think of, you know, most of the other, I can't think of, you know, there are definitely some things that are like kind of pretentious.
Right.
Yeah. You know, some nonfiction stuff. But all that almost ends up being better than I think it's going to be. Like, I remember reading Persepolis and I was like, oh, this is going to just be like, you know, trying to preach to me and tell me, and then like it's just a hilarious comic. So
Superboy,
yeah, maybe, I don't know. Oh, just all the DC comics. Just every single DC comic that comes out besides Wonder Woman.
Their focus has been more kind of, they're trying to be more adult but not in the way that they should be. They're trying to be more like serious and like unnecessarily edgy.
There's this weird thing that goes on where people mistake sort of gratuity for like maturity and sophistication, or they confuse like weird violence and overt sexuality for like being smart. I don't know. It's like
right.
And I don't know.
Right.
This is depressing.
Yeah. And we love
thanks
you,
for the
DC
questions.
Comics. Yeah.
Do we love DC Comics?
As a concept.
Some of them.
As a concept. Do you guys see that they just announced the 75th anniversary Superman logo? It's pretty cool looking.
Oh, really?
It's too bad that Superman's 75th anniversary was last month.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, and all those comics, all the Superman comics stink, except for one.
No, Action is actually better than I thought it was going to be after Grant Morrison left.
Yeah.
The art in Superman is really good right now.
But after the storyline, it's Scott Lobdell again. Well, Scott Lobdell is writing both Superman books.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah, the writing in Superman is not good.
How about some foreshadowing that there's a new good Superman title?
Yeah, hopefully.
Well, there is Superman Unchained coming out. And
that too?
Something this week.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's true. There is a good one this week. And it was fun, too. Yeah, well, thanks for the question, AJ. Sorry if we got really depressed, but you were asking about things that were humorless.
On a roll.
Yeah. All right, so up next, we got a question from Sam Marks. Sam says, Dupe has been... Oh, I almost said pooping up. Dupe has been popping up more recently.
He's been pooping up.
He's been
recently.
Pooping up. He is an Omega-level character. obviously, due to the high demand for his awesomeness. Do you think Dupe is cute or gross? Would you hang out with him?
I think he is cute and gross, and I would totally hang out with him.
I actually just said that before Nick did, but you guys did not hear me.
I had not thought he was gross until this question came up, and then I'm like, no, he's pretty gross.
Yeah, he's like a green... lima bean covered in
pustules.
Yeah.
And he's always gross. Like a drunk and or just hungover.
Yeah. I don't know if he'd let me hang out with him, but I would like to.
He hung out with Wolverine.
Yeah.
He hangs out with everybody.
He hangs out with everybody. I love the Ecstatics comics.
Yeah.
So I would love to.
And Dupe is great in Wolverine and the X-Men.
And there's a thing online where you can, you know, you can translate what he says so you can hang out with him and learn Dupe's language.
I think if there was the possibility that I could hang out with Dupe, there would probably be a possibility that I would have some kind of translator.
That's probably true. And also, hanging out with Dupe is like a gateway. You get to hang out with all these other crazy people.
Right.
Yeah. So
speaking of which,
yeah, we have a question, a voicemail question.
What?
That addresses something very similar. We should listen to it. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
All right.
Yep.
Hey guys, it's Dave from the DC shop, also known as file number 36. I was thinking if I could have a, I don't know, lunch with any character and any creator, who would the creator be and who would the character be? I don't know. I don't know who the character would be. It'd probably be like Adam Strange, I think, would be pretty cool because dude probably understands some shit. And I think that the creator would have to be Jim Starlin because, I don't know, that dude was whacked out on some crazy shit this day. But I want to know who you guys would lunch with. Thanks.
Oh man!
Thanks, Dave.
Yeah, thanks for the question. That was pretty amazing. you sound like you'd want to have like a crazy cosmic lunch and just like
talk just about planets,
get whacked out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think? So it's not just like who or who. Like it would be a combo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So who would you guys want to have lunch with? And then who would you not want to have lunch with? Let's add that on there.
I would like to have lunch with Stan Lee and then the character from Fantastic Four, Jack
Kirby.
That's
played by Jack Kirby.
Just to see them throw down again. Oh, that's a good question.
Are we hanging out with them at the same time?
Yeah, at the same time.
Oh, okay. So I guess I would... I'd like to hang out with Steve Ditko.
Oh, yeah.
And hear some of his crazy theories on things, and somebody that Steve Ditko drew, like Doctor Strange.
Oh wow!
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of cosmically trippy conversation,
you wouldn't want to hang out with Steve Ditko and Mr. A because then you would just have to listen to them talk about Ayn Rand all night.
That's true.
Yeah,
be less fun.
What about you, Jared?
I'm still thinking.
I would just want to hang out with people that get really drunk. So like,
oh really?
Like say like maybe like Grant Morrison
and Bacchus
and the Captain from Next Wave.
whoa, what are you talking about? You should go with like the Warriors 3.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that
would
be fun.
Party like crazy.
Well, but which one?
Volstagg,
the fat
obviously.
One. Yeah.
He would throw down.
Sorry, the really fat one.
Or future Thor.
Future Thor would be cool.
Yeah, okay. So Jared, do you have one?
No.
Well, we'll take your fake answer as a real answer.
All right.
Who would you not want to have lunch with?
Is it Alan Moore?
Wow.
Just Alan Moore. Like Alan Moore and anybody else.
Yeah.
No, I'd have lunch with Alan Moore. That'd
Alan Moore and the comedian. That would be a terrible day.
Yeah, I think
that would be a terrible day.
That would be a pretty bad lunch.
Man, they try to kill each other.
I would say I would not want to have lunch with Rob Liefeld or Norman Osborn together.
What am I talking about? Lunch with Red Sonja, clearly. She'd stab
Jesus,
me to death.
Jared, you're so perverted on this episode.
Jared just came from his sex addiction
Jared's
anonymous
like,
meeting.
Like Red Sonja and Wendy Pini when she was dressed up like Red Sonja at conventions in the 70s. Wait, was that who you would not want to have lunch with?
No way, she'd stab me to death.
Oh, okay. All right, well... thanks for the question, Dave.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
some whacked out stuff.
That was good.
Yeah, that was good. All right, so we have a question from another Dave.
Whoa.
This is from Dave Rockwell.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay, I got this.
Different Dave, but he's, you know, we know this Dave. He's all
right.
Wait.
Yeah. Who was the first question from? Was that David French?
Oh, there was also David French,
man,
yeah.
This is
Too Many
my
Daves.
Mind.
Too Many Daves is a good band. I'm going to play a Too Many Daves song at the end of this episode.
There we go.
All right, so what benchmark do you guys use for thinking that someone has some decent comics knowledge? For example, does being able to spot the Stan Lee cameo in a Marvel movie count as knowledge, or do you need to know things like how many times, if any, Kilowog has been married? Dave Rockwell. Well, I would say that I feel like I have a decent comics knowledge, and I do not know how many times Kilowog has been married.
Is that really, I'm quite curious now.
Yeah.
At least once, right?
I think just being curious about how many times Kilowog has been married means that at least you have a thirst for some decent comics knowledge.
Right.
I don't know. What do you guys think? What's the threshold?
I don't know. I mean, if somebody comes in and they're like, I don't know. Is that a Silver Surfer comic drawn by Mobius?
This guy's got some decent
comics. This guy knows what's up.
I think.
But if they're like, do they still put out Spawn? I'd be like, get out.
That's true. Those are definitely. Do you still put out Spawn? Also, I like the comics. Like people that like the movies more than the comics, that drives me crazy for some reason.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My thing would be breadth. Like if you know a lot about one character, that's, you know, you just love a character. But if you like know a little bit about a lot of stuff, especially like going back, like, I think that's part of it. Like, you know a lot about the old stuff and a lot of different stuff.
Mine is width. So like, if you if you read a lot of comics, you're probably pretty wide.
Right.
No, I think that's actually true. It's like some people are very specific to one character, and yeah. I feel like that's just like, that's like being obsessive and being nerdy.
Yeah.
But then like, you know, if you know about a lot of stuff, it means that you are just interested in it as a whole, and you want you want to learn more.
Like us.
Yeah. spotting a Stan Lee cameo in a Marvel movie just means that you're from America.
At this point, yeah.
Yeah. Also, I think my real answer to this is I don't really think about that. I mean, I don't mean that to sound really dismissive or anything, but like,
I guess like one instant, like, kind of gauge if we're talking about like Marvel movies is anybody who was in the theater at the end of Avengers and was like, oh, that's Thanos.
That's Thanos at the end of Avengers?
I thought it was a Skrull.
I thought it was the magic pickle from the Scott Morse book.
There you go. Anyone who knows Scott Morse's magic
anybody
pickle.
Who saw that the first time and without like reading it online or something and knew that it was Thanos. Like,
yeah.
That's some knowledge right there.
I didn't know who that was.
Did you not?
No.
But you know who Thanos is.
Now I do.
Yeah. I mean, he's not like, yeah, he's not that like.
Oh, you didn't know who Thanos was?
I've never
was
read
before
Infinity
that?
Gauntlet.
He's not that.
So I recognize the character.
He's not
when
that
people told me,
widely but recognizable.
Yeah.
Have you now read Infinity Gauntlet?
I have now.
He's like Kang. I mean, nobody like.
Oh my god! I hope Kang's
people who are
next
super into comics like know Kang, but like most people, no idea.
Can you imagine if Kang was in the next Avengers movie?
He is in the next Avengers
what
movie. Yeah.
Oh, really?
I'm filming it right now.
Is he played by Thanos?
He's played by me. I'm going to go back in time when I get older and cast myself as Kang.
I once drove past a place and it was called Kang's Grocery, and I laughed. And that's how you know I have some decent comics knowledge. All right, well, thanks for the question, Dave Rockwell.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. All right, up next we've got a question from Coleman.
Coleman
Engel.
Coleman?
Coleman?
Isn't he the artist of Kid Gobbler?
He is the artist of Kid Gobbler. It's two T's, two F's.
Two T's, two F's.
Kit Coffler.
Kit Coffler. He says, what do you guys think about Glenn Close being in the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie?
Well, Glenn Close is in the new Guardians.
I do not
she
know
Thanos?
That.
She's Thanos. Yeah, Nick, do you know who she plays in the Guardians of the Galaxy
movie? I heard that she is playing the head of the Nova Corps.
Why was this not brought up in the news segment?
I don't know, because I just remembered it.
Because it happened today.
Yeah, it happened today.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. For one thing, the Nova Corps is in Guardians of the Galaxy movie, which is insane.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what else I got to say about it. It sounds
cool. I think it's cool. I think it's big news. On par with Robert Redford being in the Captain America movie.
Yeah, pretty much exactly on par.
Pretty much exactly on par. Yeah, so, you know, we like Glenn Close.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
She'll bring us closer to God.
That's true.
All right, thanks for the question, Coleman.
Yeah, Coleman.
We got one more question.
Get back to drawing that comic.
Yeah. Go get busy, bud. Go drink some strawberry Ritas. Up next is a question from Matt Dembisky, who I can now pronounce his name because he sends so many questions. He says, do you guys collect original art? If so, what kind and how?
I feel like I've gotten this question before.
Have you?
Answer it again in a different way.
I don't really have it. I have like sketches from people, but I don't
follow up question from Matt Dembisky. What do you guys think about Glenn Close being in the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie? Answer it.
Good question.
Yeah, I know Jared has a lot of original artwork.
Not as much as I think I do sometimes. But often it's like, especially SPX, which is our local favorite bestest show in the world.
The Small Press Expo.
Indeed. It's just
that
like,
what it stands for?
Sometime in September.
Sometimes.
So that was Thanos at the end of SPX?
That would explain a lot. Just like you're in a room with a bunch of accessible artists, often who are amazingly talented, but are also not famous enough to sell their art for $1 million.
Like, for example, I bought the first page of Roger Langridge's unpublished Muppets comic for $50.
Yeah, so
ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like,
it had Kermit the Frog, Gonzo, other Muppets all on there.
Ridiculous.
His art is amazing.
Yeah.
Real life.
I bought a piece of art that I thought was drawn by Mobius, but it was just somebody's drawing of Morbius
that you had printed out off of DeviantArt.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
So I have sketchbooks. That's more my thing.
Yeah, I have a bunch of sketchbooks.
And
too.
Nick does a fun thing with you'll take Marvel, the blank Marvel covers, and get people to draw those.
Yeah,
right?
I did that a few
but
times.
But people who are sort of unusual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
had people draw me Skrulls. That was pretty fun.
Jim Rugg Skrulls and stuff like that.
Right. That's pretty awesome.
But Jared, you've got some crazy originals, don't you? You've got some Paul Pope originals.
Paul Pope cover, which was pretty sweet. I got a couple of Carl Speed McNeils, some Chance Kolchalka. I don't know. I feel like a lot more people are doing prints now, too, and I love prints, so I bought a lot of those.
Oh, I've got a ton of prints.
Yeah.
That are just, like, in an envelope. Like, they're not even.
Me, too. Yeah. That's, I have so little up on the wall.
What's your favorite prints?
Purple Rain? yeah, probably Purple. I mean, album? Yeah, Purple Rain. Yeah, Under Cherry Moon's good, too.
That's
good soundtrack. Also, the first album's good.
With or without the Revelation?
I like the New Power Generation.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, Cream, Get On Top, all that stuff. And Bat Dance is my favorite Prince song.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's great.
Vicky Vale. Vicky Vale. I've got some stuff, but it's all by, like, smaller people, like Dustin Harbin. I've got a cool thing of the Addams Family that he drew.
Oh, really?
That's awesome.
Yeah. I've got some stuff by Lamar Abrams.
Yep. Yeah, Lamar.
Stuff by just, like, my friends.
My friends.
Who do comics. But, yeah. It's always fun to buy art.
Yeah.
And it's that's how a lot of these people make money. So you should, if you see them at conventions, get commissions.
Buy it.
Get them to draw crazy stuff for you.
And honestly, comics is like the cheapest art form to get art in. It's just ridiculously underpriced.
Yeah, comics is just everybody's underpaid in comics. all right, cool. Well, that's it for the questions this week. Just those. If you guys have questions, you can send them to a podcast at bigplanetcomics.com. You can call our hotline at 1703. Right? 539 cast. I didn't actually write it down on here.
Yeah.
But that's 1703-539-CASD. And another thing we're doing is every week we're going to put up a post just asking for questions on Facebook. If you're not already following our Facebook page, what are you guys doing?
Party on there.
Do that and put questions on there, and we will answer them probably.
Probably. Yeah.
Unless we get too many, and then we'll pick the best ones. So if yours doesn't get picked, just know it wasn't one of the best ones. Cool. Well, you guys want to do some reviews?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We love comics. They're swell. Except when they're written by Scott Lobdell. I prefer important books like Louis Riel. It's time for reviews.
Up first this week, we've got Adventures of Superman #1. Written by various people, so we should just sort of talk about each thing separately, right?
So, yes, anthology book with three stories in it. The first is Mr. Hefe Parker with Hefe art
Parker.
By Chris Samney, also known as Jeff Parker in North of the Rio Grande.
And Chris Samney, also known as Christopher Samney to his mother, probably when he was a very young child.
These are all written by Jeffs.
Is that true?
Yeah, Jeff Parker, Jeff Lemire,
and Jeffston Jordan.
Jeffston Jordan.
So we'll do that story first? Or?
Yeah, sure. Let's just talk about the first story. Jared, why don't you tell people what it was about?
So this is a Superman saving people in the middle of the city story when he runs across a guy who seems to be losing control of his powers. And he's not really a supervillain so much as a crazy dude who just explodes things. So then there's a lot of, like, how do I stop this guy and what's causing his powers and what's going on? And so it's a lot of just Superman being really cool and trying to save stuff. And then evil twist at the end of supervillain manipulating things.
Yeah, and it was fun. Chris Samney, I wish that he would just draw Superman.
Yeah.
I wish Jeff Parker would just write Superman.
Right. Yeah.
Because this was a fun Superman story.
This is better than all the other Superman stories that DC has published in the last 2 years.
And guess what? Superman's wearing red underwear in this.
Yep.
So the New 52 is dumb.
you see this costume and, like, the simplicity of it. It's just so great, and then you're like, why would they not leave it like this?
I don't know.
I think it's like the sort of thing that could hold up for 75 years.
It's not just the red underwear, it's the lines on his costume that he has now, and just silly.
I don't know, things are crazy over there. But so the second story in here is cool. It's by Jeff Lemire, written and drawn, and he of course does a bunch of stuff.
Sweet Tooth.
Yeah, he used to do a bunch of stuff that he drew, and now he just writes superhero comics.
Yeah.
But yeah, he did Sweet Tooth, and he did Underwater Welder, which was our best graphic novel of the year last year, and a bunch of other good stuff, Essex County, all that stuff. But this is about a couple kids just playing Superman, and one of them is playing a supervillain, and they keep switching around, and it's just like a fun story about kids playing and friendship, and then there's like a little thing at the end that's a little sweet tag that makes it, you know, just like a, I don't know, it's just like a cute story. It's like the kind of thing that sticks with you way more than anything that you read in most monthly superhero comics.
Right.
True.
Yeah, and it was fun.
And then the last story was about kind of almost your typical
By Justin Jordan and Riley Rothman.
Oh, yeah. Your typical Superman bizarro story. It's hard to really say anything about it without telling you what all of it is about.
I feel like that's all these stories. They're very...
they're short.
Yeah, they're short stories. They all have sort of O. Henry endings.
Yeah. It's cool and it's cute and I don't know.
And by that, I mean everybody eats O. Henry's at the end of all the stories.
That's true. Yeah, but overall, this whole book is pretty great. It's fun, which is something we said was missing from a lot of DC books. I don't know.
It's got personality.
It's the best Superman comic I've read
in 5 years.
Right.
Honestly, like it's definitely the best Superman comic that's come out all year. I think it's better than the Earth One stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure.
It's good, and there are going to be a few of these, right? Like I think this is sort of like the Legends of the Dark Knight series, where they're just going to use it to test people out or do what they do.
Yeah, they publish them online first, and then eventually they print them out. So
yeah.
We'll see.
So that's Adventures of Superman number one.
There you go.
Up next, we have an older comic that just came back in a print, and it's so good that we want to talk about it. This is Doctor Strange the Oath, written by Brian K. Vaughan, with art by Marcus Martin, who are the team behind Private Eye, which is a great new online comic. Also, Brian K. Vaughan writes Saga, and Marcus Martin drew Spider-Man for a while,
Daredevil
for a while, just draws better than most people that are on the Earth.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Yeah, so Doctor Strange, the Oath.
All right, so if you haven't read this, it came out about 5 years ago, is that right?
Yeah, maybe even longer
six or
at this
seven,
point.
Yeah.
It was 2006, yeah, or 2006.
This is probably
go on.
Of, if not the best Doctor Strange stories I've ever read. Basic setup for it is that basically Wong has cancer, and he's dying, and Doctor Strange may have found a cure.
Magical cure.
Yeah. And so he teams up with Wong and the night nurse to try to find the cure for Wong's cancer. And they get wrapped up in this kind of bigger plot about linked to Doctor Strange's past as a surgeon and his like arrogance when he was younger. It's just great.
The way that this sort of incorporates like Doctor Strange's like accident that injured him in the first place, and like his loss of ability to be a surgeon anymore, and mixed with like sort of evil pharmaceutical companies and like all this crazy stuff, but then tons of astral projection and all the stuff you want in a Doctor Strange comic.
I feel
like
this would make the perfect Doctor Strange movie.
Yeah,
it does a good job of like introducing who he is and what he does, and you kind of get his origin story throughout the kind of spread out throughout the comic.
By building on it rather than just repeating it.
Yeah, and everything that's happening is tied to all that. I don't know. It's just so perfectly structured.
Are they still making a Doctor Strange movie?
Supposedly.
I think somebody asked us a long time ago who should play Doctor Strange. And I think we decided that Jeremy Davies would like be awesome.
He would be pretty strange.
But so this whole thing is just it's just really, really good. Yeah. I mean, Brian K. Vaughan hasn't really written much superhero stuff. Of course, Runaways, which is fantastic.
And The Hood.
And The Hood. Yep. But just even the first scene in this of, like, Iron Fist and Aranya, who's, like, was Spider-Girl for a little while, just sitting in the waiting room of the night nurse. It's just, like, that kind of, you know, like
scene and dialogue and characterization.
Like Aranya's like, I got hit in the face with a mace.
Yeah.
And not like, the kind you get sprayed with.
Yeah, no, like a medieval weapon. And the story's very dramatic. I think they emphasize the bond that Doctor Strange and Wong have really well in it.
Yeah.
And things get even a little emotional in this book at times.
Definitely.
I feel like when
super
you're
emotional, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they throw in Night Nurse, who's basically, for those of you who don't know who she is, it's basically like a...
For those of you without a decent comics knowledge.
Exactly. A doctor who takes care of superheroes. And she's like... Doesn't have superpowers, so she's like a perfect contrast to the super weird, action-y, magical
she's
world.
She's like the underground
the
doctor for superheroes that can go to.
She had her own comic at one point in the 70s. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. But yeah, like the three of them together all work really well as like against each other and like having dialogue. They play off each other.
Yeah,
so well.
like her and Doctor Strange have a very like thin man, Adam's rib sort of relationship, which is pretty awesome for people who have a decent movie knowledge. It's really good. Like Nick said, probably maybe the best Doctor Strange thing of all time. I mean, I love the original Steve Ditko stuff. Some of the Gene Colan stuff is great too.
Yeah.
But just this whole thing holds together and is very modern. I know a lot of people, reading old
comics. It's modern, but also not, I don't know.
Yeah, no.
The storytelling is modern, but the, I don't know, the art is definitely very
classic. Yeah, and Marcos Martin's art is, it's just great. I feel like everybody's seen his stuff at this point. But
we will recommend it again.
Yeah, it is highly recommended.
Highest recommended?
Our highest recommendation. Yes. Indeed. I mean, one of the best superhero graphic novels of the past 10 years, probably.
Yeah, it's really good.
All right, so up next we're going to talk about two things at once here.
Combo.
Yeah, this is a combo. So we've got a couple books about the kitchen. First is In the Kitchen with Alain Passard. Inside the World and Mind of a Master Chef by Christophe Blaine. And then the second is Relish, My Life in the Kitchen by Lucy Nisley. So both of these books are kind of, it's interesting because they both do sort of similar
the same
things.
Formula.
Yeah, but in very different ways. Yeah. So, and that formula is, it will be a little bit of a story. And then a recipe or sort of a history of a food item or something like that.
It could be comic recipe.
Yeah. But in the Alain Passard book, it's very focused on just like, 2 years I think he spends?
Yeah.
Following around Alain Passard, who's a chef that I had not heard of, but I guess
he's... I hadn't either. But yeah, he apparently has a 3-star restaurant in Paris, L'Arpège. And literally, I don't know if... I think in the beginning it was like, they said, do you want to write a comic about him? And Christophe Blaine's just like... The Arpège restaurant, of course. Alain Passard, of course.
He's like, I get to eat there.
All the time? And so it's an awesome. So basically, goes and just shadows Alain Passard around and just like learns how the kitchen works, but also a lot about recipes and stuff and how his cooking style is and what they all do there. And then they'll take a break and he'll be like, oh, so what I just showed you? Here's the recipe for it. So there's like what?
Yeah. So it's basically like
15 recipes in here.
The format kind of is like there's like a written recipe that's just text, and then the next page or 2 pages or so will be them kind of like showing you how they make it, like hand by like motion by motion, with a little more descriptive text. But it's pretty cool. It made me really hungry. Yeah. and the other book, like, both made me hungry.
And it's funny, actually. I mean, that's a thing that happens to Christophe Blaine a lot in this book. While Alain Passard's talking about food, he's like, oh, I'm so hungry, and he's like, just sit down. We'll make you something.
Yeah. So like the constant undercurrent is him like trying to scam more meals out of this like master chef, and he's like, for the book, don't you want to make me this meal?
He's like, we have these rare truffles we can only use a couple months a year, and he's like, I'd like to try that, you know, for the book. it's pretty fun.
It's amazing.
So the part of this that I liked the most was sort of they become kind of friends over this over this period of time, and there's a point where Christophe goes out to Passard's like country home, basically, where he also has
two
a farm.
Country homes,
and you know, they just eat and sort of spend time together. And I actually found that more engaging.
Yeah, that was fascinating.
Some of the food stuff I've found to be a little bit pretentious.
Yeah, this is very much like haute cuisine. This is like literally like this is not like, hey, take your spatula and turn your, you know, scrambled eggs in the pan. It's like ingredients and like French terms. Even this is translated to English. It's like terms I've never heard
of.
Like
beauty
and
like, in cooking.
Yes.
Which I think is interesting.
Which is awesome.
But I also think sometimes Passard can be a little bit up his own butt.
Some of the stuff
he talks about like color arrangement and stuff, it's just it doesn't appeal to me. I think it goes a little too far. And
he's very like the experience and the look and the smell, like it's very much like, I don't know, the extra parts of food is very important to him.
Yeah, so. But in a way that I feel like isn't true to the actual experience of like eating food. I don't know. It's it's very strange. But then overall, I think it's a good book, and it's interesting.
I want to try some of these recipes too.
Yeah,
some of them are impossible because I could never get the ingredients.
Yeah, it's like squab dragé with mead. You're like, Nick and I are both like, what's a squab? Is it some sort of bird? Yeah. Like, dragé?
And actually, what is mead?
Mead is an alcohol made with honey, I believe.
Yeah, that's true. But
squab is a pigeon.
Yeah. Did you know that? It's a baby pigeon.
I didn't. Oh, I think I did maybe know
that. Yeah, we were both kind of like, maybe a bird of some sort.
But, so some of the recipes in here seem very sort of unattainable.
Yeah.
Right. But that's sort of French. I don't know if you guys cook very much, but like the Julia Child cookbook, like her book is like great, but some of the stuff is so hard though. Right. It'll be like a recipe and it's like first make this base, and then it's like see this other 40 pages about how to make this base.
Yeah.
I'm like,
right.
Oh geez. But
you're gonna need a blowtorch.
Yeah, so you might not want to try these recipes if you're...
Some of them seem, you know, for it relatively easy.
Yeah, beginner. Better ones.
But yeah.
Oh, like the one where you just crush up candy and put it on strawberries.
Yeah. Which is genius.
Yeah, I was like, I've never done that.
Yeah.
But in contrast, Relish is a lot more personal.
Yeah.
Because Relish is more about her life, because her parents are both chefs, or one of them's a chef and one of them's a mom.
Dodged a bullet. I thought you were going to say foodie.
I almost did.
Parents are both foodie.
Thank you both for not saying foodie.
But yeah, and it's about her life growing up around all this fabulous food and kind of her parents. It's funny. Her parents are almost like... what's the chef name in the last one? I forgot already.
Alain Bassar.
They're almost like him, where they're kind of stuck up about the food a little bit. And she's like, she really likes McDonald's. She's like, come on, every once in a while you got to eat some McDonald's. It tastes good.
Which I think is what makes this book great.
She enjoys food.
She just loves eating things
that taste good, and she doesn't care about any of the stuff behind it.
She loves Lucky Charms because Lucky Charms are good.
But then, you know, she makes a lot more like kind of fancy foods, and it's very interesting. And the recipes are a little simpler; they're a little easier. Like, I could make a lot of these.
And her recipes are super visual. It's literally, she draws all the ingredients, all the steps.
I think her recipes are more fun to read than the recipes in the other book.
But also, like, between the recipes, there's a lot more comic stuff in this.
There's like eight chapters or so, and each one has a recipe, and then it's like a long story in between.
Yeah. So she talks about a lot at the beginning of the book how taste can bring back memories, you know, I think that's also true of smell is like a big thing as well, and that's how kind of each of the sections start with. Sort of like food and things that bring back memories, and then they'll go into an anecdote, whether it's about her going to, you know, on vacations to Rome with her father after her parents have a divorce, or it's about, like, you know, working in a fancy food store when she's in college because she gets a discount on the food.
Yeah, she can get good cheese.
Yeah, but the whole thing is pretty interesting, and, you know, there's always really funny stuff in it, and it gets really personal at times, but it's always really engaging. Yeah. And the food stuff in it is great. I was actually more interested in trying some of the recipes in this, just because it seems more fun.
Yeah.
I just thought the whole thing was really well told.
And plus, she's had a very interesting life. It's like Kevin said, she tries all these different jobs and meets all these different people, so it's a very varied set of both recipes and experiences in life that are all tied together with food, and it's awesome.
Yeah, I think part of my problem with the Alain Bassar book is, like, he does not seem to have a sense of humor at all.
Right.
Like, Christoph Blaine obviously has a sense of humor, but Bassar, who's the focus of the book, does not. And because of that, it was, like, not as fun for me to read as I think Relish was. To the point where when I started Relish, I was like, I don't want to read another book about food stuff right now.
Yeah.
But then by the time I got to the end of it, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me, Relish, highly recommended.
Yep, me too.
And In the Kitchen with Alain Bassar, really an interesting book.
Yeah, fascinating.
But not as great. Yeah, not as great.
There you go.
Cool. For all you foodies out there.
Yep.
All right. Up next, we've got a book by Mark Miller. So this is super confusing.
I know.
This is not
our Mark Miller.
This is not our Mark Miller.
It's not?
This is not Miller World Mark Miller. Well, it could be our Mark Miller. R. Mark Miller. We love you, Mark Miller.
I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in a while.
Yeah, why is he not sending questions anymore?
He's writing Clive Barker comics.
He is. Art in this by Jaime Zhang. I'm going to pretend like I said that right. And but this is also written by Clive Barker, who is the guy that did Hellraiser is probably what most people know for, I would think. Yeah. And Nightbreed. Isn't that him as well?
Yeah.
And Cinnabites, or are those little cinnamon rolls?
There's little rolls that shoot, like, chains out of.
Delicious chains.
They shoot chains out of Marilyn Manson videos. Yeah, but this is very Clive Barker-ish story.
Yeah. It's very weird and
creepy,
kind of
supernatural horror stuff.
Yeah, yeah, so the basic story in this is like, there's a guy who's...
a guy who has some sort of weird quest vision thing.
He's having dreams about this
thing. He's sort of an archaeologist, and he becomes obsessed with this weird pyramid relic thing, and then it drives him sort of insane in a religious way, and then he meets this weird
weird dreams that lead him into the desert, that lead him into this kind of ancient structure, and he just inherently knows that he has to smash it open.
Right.
And inside of it is, like, a god who basically is maybe the god? I don't know.
And then meanwhile, he's sort of gone missing, and his son is looking for him.
Right.
Right.
And so they start finding these weird, clues sort of hinting at where their dad has gone and kind of...
And what he's been doing.
And what he's been doing. And then it ends with, like, a crazy, violent thing that's very Clive Barker-y.
Yeah. But yeah, very Lovecraftian, you know, the guy going mad to research ancient horrors and people trying to investigate. And
I really liked the art in this, actually.
I did, too. It was...
At first glance, I didn't like it, but when I was reading it, there's a lot of cool detail to the characters and stuff.
Yeah, I thought it fit the story well. I thought the story was sort of middling, though. Like, it wasn't great. I don't know.
I thought I had a few cool, like, little... Like, I liked the parts with, like, the son a little more.
Yeah.
Because he had, like, some... There was some cool mystery kind of being built up. And the parts with the god and the other guy.
The father.
A little too over the top,
yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, the whole thing, it's weird because it's not a story I've exactly read before, but for some reason it still all felt very predictable.
Right.
I was just kind of going through it. I wasn't attached to anything that was going on when I was reading this.
Right.
Is, I guess, basically what happened. What do you think, Jared?
Very Lovecraftian.
Definitely that.
That's it.
Not as Lovecraftian as another book we're going to review this week.
It's true. Relish My Life in the Kitchen.
So up next, we've got a book called Obituary Man. This is by Philippe Girard, who I saw put out another book a couple weeks ago, which I want to go read now.
I was just looking at it. It's right there.
Oh, he did that one, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I started that one. It's an awesome just like travelogue about going to Russia that looks amazing.
Well, this book was great. I'm going to just say that right off the bat.
Yes,
and it's called Obituary Man, and it's basically about a guy who feels very directionless in his life. He does not have a lot going on.
He's a total office drone.
Yeah, and he gets this... He reads his horoscope for some reason. It doesn't even seem like he believes in it, but it freaks him out, and so he decides he needs to do something to change his life. And then he finds an obituary in the newspaper of somebody that he sort of knew.
Like an acquaintance.
Yeah, I think maybe they knew each other in high school or something like that. And so he goes to the guy's funeral, and the priest is like, does anybody want to say anything about this guy? And nobody says anything. And he feels like it's his responsibility to stand up and sort of say something.
Yeah.
And in that moment, he becomes very eloquent and he gives this sort of really amazing speech.
Incredible speech. Yeah,
which is also very vague and could sort of apply to anybody.
Right, yeah.
But it's the kind of thing that
people want to hear.
That people want to hear, yeah. And because of that, the guy's family, you know, is very happy and like his mother hugs him and stuff. And the guy's... the main character. Do they even say his name? They must.
Maurice, right?
Yeah, Maurice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he gets kind of addicted to that.
Yeah, he gets kind of addicted to that. So he starts going around to different funerals and giving speeches, and that then leads him into a sticky situation.
When he goes to the wrong funeral.
Where he goes to the wrong funeral. And I don't want to say too much about that because that's... I feel like I've already...
We said
like
a lot. Yeah.
But it's really well done.
Really well written.
Like,
especially for so much like speechifying parts. Like I said, they're very touching and they sound good. And there's a lot of philosophy and like about life. And
it has a great twist at the end.
Yeah, the twist is great. And then it's just very like emotionally satisfying. Throughout the whole thing.
Yeah,
I was very... I talked about on Next Testament, I was just not very engaged. The opposite in this book. I was so hooked into everything that was going on, and I cared so much about this character.
Right.
And, you know, even though he seems unfamiliar to me, he's not somebody I can really relate to, but I don't know, something about it. It was just really well done. The art's great. It's very simple, very European, definitely. Black and white sort of brush stuff, but, it's just a very
wonderful
good book.
Wonderful book.
It's our highest recommendation.
Yep.
It's short.
Yeah, but
it's about 70 or 80 pages.
Yeah, but it's as short as it should be.
Yeah,
that's exactly right.
All right, we just got a couple more things this week. Up next is a really good book. This is The Wake, number one, by Scott Snyder and Sean Murphy. This is the book I was referring to when I said that.
A different Wake from the last book.
Yes, that's true. Different from the funeral. This is Scott Snyder, who's been writing Batman, wrote Severed, wrote
American Vampire,
and Sean Murphy, who drew a bunch of Star Wars comics, drew Joe the Barbarian, and drew Punk Rock Jesus. Yeah.
So this one is interesting because it does the classic start with some crazy stuff and then flashback. So it starts off with a very short sequence where a high-techy woman with a crazy glider and a cyborged-up dolphin in a flooded, ruined metropolis are trying to investigate something. And then there's a huge tidal wave or, you know, rising of water or something creepier. And then it flashes back to, say, 200 years earlier.
Yeah, 200 years earlier.
Looks like our time.
This book is so good, I forgot about that first part.
Yeah, no, exactly, because that's just great. The frame thing. And then it goes to Dr. Archer, who's a female scientist who's largely dealing with aquatic life of some sort.
She's a marine biologist.
That's another way of saying what I said. Smarter.
She's a ocean scientist.
Yeah. But yeah, she is recruited by a mysterious group, which I believe might be the Homeland Security Department.
Something
of
like that.
Security.
They're definitely a shady government.
To get together and help them out. And she's apparently had been on the outs with them and had some, you know, troubles in their past with, you know, bucking authority, whatever. And she agrees to go along because she'll get lots of funding and get back at her thing. The typical, like,
bribery. It's kind of like the beginning of, like a Roland Emmerich film where he goes around and he's like, I need these people for my team. Yep. And, like, she's, like, the main character. So, like, they focus on her a little more. And then she gets to the place and they're like, here's the team and stuff. And, like, everything's not as it seems.
Sure.
Kind of like the easiest way to describe it. But then it has a lot of deeper things going on and a lot of crazy things start happening.
I mean, even more directly, it's very similar to Atlantis, the Disney movie. It's like a down on his luck scientist working a crappy job that he doesn't want to work, has special knowledge that then leads him to a group that's doing an underwater exploration, and then he meets up with his crazy crew.
Yeah.
Nice. That's how Atlantis starts.
Right.
But yeah, have you not seen Atlantis?
Nope.
It's designed, all the designs by Mike Mignola.
What, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I heard. Yeah, I remember that. But
that's
a
good movie. I just watched it like a couple weeks ago.
That's all right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they go up to Alaska where they go into a submarine and go deep. And she's introduced to the rest of the team, which she didn't know was coming along.
Like in Atlantis.
Exactly. Yeah. But there's, like, stuff slipped in here that I didn't even really pick up on. Like, the first guy she meets is a professor of folklore and mythology. You know, and you're oh, cool, other scientists. Wait a minute.
Wait, this guy's not a scientist.
Yeah, and so as it goes on, and she's like, why? Oh, so the reason they recruit her is they picked up some weird sounds from underwater, and she's like, they're like, this is not a whale. What is this? She's like, I'm not sure. And they're like, are you sure?
Oh, yeah. Because
like a flashback to something weird. And they're like, you really have never heard this before? She's like, no. So, yeah, there's foreboding foreshadowing going on here. And then there's a crazy twist at the end of darker,
you kind of see
things.
Kind of the reason they're there. And it's like pretty insane.
Yeah.
And then there's the even more insane thing.
Yeah. It steps it up again.
Yeah.
Chapter 4. There's like, so the first part, like I said, in the future is like chapter 1, and there's chapter 2, chapter 3. And then it jumps to chapter 4, which is a one pager of you're just like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing's great. And it seems to be building to something that is very much the kind of thing that I like a lot.
Me too.
Super huge epic.
Yeah, well, and yeah, I don't want to say too much, but yeah, it's really, really good.
Yeah, and this is a 10-issue miniseries, so this is definitely like good focused story, hopefully with a great ending.
And Sean Murphy's art is amazing.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to say. God, I think this is the best art that Sean Murphy's ever done. I think
other than Punk Rock Jesus, which
I think is
amazing.
I think the art in this is better than Punk Rock Jesus. I think it's a little more restrained, and I think the coloring serves it really well.
Right.
I feel like his panels aren't as busy as they usually are. And yeah, I don't know. I just think it. I think it's great. Who did the coloring in this book? Because I want to.
Someone did.
I want to say that the coloring is great. Matt Hollingsworth, who's the guy that colors Daredevil.
And, there you go.
I believe the person who we said was the best colorist of the year last year. So
possibly.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, Wake number one. I think best new book, best issue one that's come out since East of West number one.
Yeah,
for me.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Get it.
We got another number one this week. This is X-Men number one.
X-Men.
Yeah, this is written by Brian Wood, who actually wrote some X-Men recently, but is probably better known for DMZ, Northlanders, Local, New York 5.
Mara.
A bunch of stuff. And art by, is it Olivier Coipel?
I think it's Olivier.
Olivier Coipel, who drew, what was his big, he drew a big Marvel crossover.
Siege.
There you go.
Yeah.
Do a bunch of things, yeah.
Yeah. And this is a new X-Men book that focuses on an all-female team.
Yeah. It's weird because there hasn't been, I think, a full X-Men team that's just all the women. It's kind of weird because it's kind of
There was that crappy Milo Manara, Chris Claremont comic.
Oh, X-Women. Yeah.
X-Women.
But it's a weird thing that they're just kind of randomly form a team of women, but not actually like try to.
Well, I don't think it's actually even a team.
I totally disagree with that. I think this is this is largely set at the Jean Grey School for these mutants. And the thing that really kicked it home for me about this is just they didn't really have to make a team. It's just the X-Men have so many characters and so many good characters that literally they could just be like, well, if all these characters are standing around, they would all go to help. And they're all awesome.
Yeah, so. I think they don't even really form like a sub team or anything like that.
Right.
It's just these six women characters or whatever just happen to be the focus of this story.
Yeah. Right.
And then from I imagine from this point, you know, we'll then go on adventures together or whatever.
Right, but that was my point. It wasn't like he had to like pick six obscure characters and try to make them cool. It's just like they're all these great characters, why not just have them do stuff together? And I think it works.
Yeah.
Really well.
Yeah, no, I do too.
Yeah. And the basic setup for this is it a spoiler to say what's up with Jubilee?
Jubilee has a baby with her. You don't know if it's her baby or
nobody knows
what's really going on. And at the same time, somebody is following her. And she contacts the school to tell them that somebody's following her.
She
needs help. And then things get more complicated. Actually, I wouldn't want to say much more than that beyond that, though.
Yeah,
you know, another character shows up who's related to the story.
Right.
A character shows up. Like, you know, it's like you don't want to give stuff away. But I don't know. I don't know what there are a couple twists in this that are pretty cool.
Yeah. The
art's great. I feel like the writing, Brian Wood's dialogue is really fun. I liked his other X-Men stuff he did too, that sort of Cthulhu storyline he was doing.
Yeah. It's really fun and funny, and it's interesting to see all these characters together in their own book.
Yeah. And the art is really, really good.
Right. Really good.
And the story's loose in a good way. Like, it's fun, it's light. And by the time you get to the end, you want to read the next issue.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's really about it.
It's really cool.
I will say it's not an amazing book.
No.
It didn't blow my mind.
It's like a really good X-Men book.
Yeah, it's like a really good X-Men book.
Yeah,
and if you like X-Men, you should read this.
And I think one of the good things about this one is also it's one of the only ones, only X-Men books you can read without having any knowledge of what's going on in the other X-Men books.
Yeah, so
it seems very detached from all the other stuff.
Yeah, I think Wolverine and the X-Men used to be that, but maybe isn't that as much anymore.
Yeah.
Kind of, but not as much, yeah.
And, yeah, but it's good.
Yeah, read
it. It's a good first issue. All right, and lastly on this episode, we've got a couple of
combo
big mini comics.
Yeah.
Do you still call them mini comics when they're like 9x12?
Yeah, no.
So this is Ritual issue 1 and 2 by Malachi Ward.
Malachi?
Sure. Did I say Malachi?
That's a good curse word.
Yeah.
By the way.
Awesome. This is by Malachi Ward. So both of these are Ritual, but they are two separate stories. So the first one is called Real Life. I guess we should talk about that.
Yeah, this series is Ritual, but there are definitely standalone one-shot stories.
So the first one, Real Life, is about, it's just kind of about this couple, and it's sort of very average things going on. It is a little ominous at the beginning because this girl is having a dream about cockroaches crawling out of her boyfriend.
It was creepy. It was so gross.
But then it just goes into some basic stuff, like she's a piano teacher and he's a writer for a website, and they're just kind of hanging out with each other and everything's sort of very innocent. And then the power goes out and there's this huge flash, and then things start to get really, really weird, and it turns into a bit of a horror comic.
Yep.
And that's all I really want to say about this.
It's good. Yeah.
And it's really good.
It's kind of one of those things you have to get into. And the art's really cool. It reminds me a little bit of, I don't know. Like,
Sean Ford?
Yeah, yeah. Maybe
Sean Ford, the guy who drew Only Skin.
Yeah.
I'd say the art reminds me a lot of his stuff. It's like very competent and very moody at the same time.
Yeah.
It's you know, cartoony. You know, it's also similar to guys like Sammy Harkham and
Charles Schwarzman, maybe? Or?
Yeah, I would say Charles Schwarzman. Yeah, yeah, definitely. But it's just it's a good book. It's creepy, and it's short, complete story in, 30 pages or whatever, and I really liked it.
I liked it. And I like the second one a lot, too, and the second one's a little more...
The Reverie.
Yeah, that one's a little more weird.
A little bit.
It's about... each page skips ahead, 10 years or so, and it's about this kid and his... I mean, his dad and his kids, and kind of, snippets of their life, but their life seems to get weirder and weirder as it goes along, and... It involves a wishing dimension.
Yeah, called the Reverie.
Right. Yeah. And their kid's trying to get their dad back, and it's crazy.
Yeah,
I don't even know how
to sci-fi horror
meta
virtual reality.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's kind of about the Reverie, sort of like an artificial heaven.
Yeah.
It's insane.
And the build up to that, like, you're like, where is this going? You're like, I didn't know it was going here.
Yeah, and it's a short thing, so it's kind of hard to say much more about it because that's all of it.
Yeah, I feel like that's true of both of these, but. But that also says a lot about just how good they are, because the ideas are the really strong thing in these two books, I feel like. And they're both really interesting sci-fi horror ideas that I feel like I've seen aspects of before, but they both feel very fresh and original as well. And I thought they were really well done.
Yeah, and the art's great, and it seems like you got even better in the second one, actually.
Good job, Malaki. these are good. So hopefully Malachi Ward's going to do more of these. I don't know.
Is there a third one? There might be.
Maybe there is.
We'll have to find out.
We don't have it yet, if there is. These were both really good. There were a lot of really good comics this week.
Yeah.
This was a good week.
This was a good podcast, you guys. Yeah. Good
Yay.
Work.
Not a really bad book in the bunch.
Yeah.
There's a few, like, okay ones, but nothing, like, bad.
Yeah, I mean, there was Next Testament, but it wasn't bad.
No, it wasn't bad. It was just okay.
Yeah.
The worst book was like okay.
Yeah. The worst book that came out this week was probably just something we didn't talk about.
Catwoman Annual.
Yeah. Did you guys read anything else really good this week?
I did.
Oh, I did.
What'd you get?
Wolverine and the X-Men.
Oh yeah.
We were just talking about. It's always awesome, and this issue is like the prelude to the Hellfire Saga, which seems to be a big to do. But it's it's awesome. It's like everything that's been building up since the first issue of Wolverine and the X-Men come into a head. I feel like we should talk about the first issue of that.
Next issue. Yeah, sure.
I caught up on Clone, which just came out in trade, and their second issue after the trade, so it's on issue 7, just came out this week. It's like the craziest, like, B-movie action sci-fi thing I've read in so long. It's kind of ridiculous, but like nonstop fun and just over the top bananas.
It's like the best sci-fi original series that could ever happen.
Yeah.
Like, it's like that kind of level of kind of crappiness, but like.
Yeah, but it's awesome. Yeah, exactly. Like, this is so cool, even though it's ridiculous.
So it's better than most sci-fi.
Yeah, really.
Series. But,
Jones for that. Check it out. It's really cool. Good.
It's got lots of clones. It gets a little confusing. I feel like I need to read it more, like, in trade.
No, the trade really helped.
Because it's like. There's clones, and
lot of them.
They all look the same, and there's so many of them, and they all are different characters in the book, and it's like kind of confusing after a while.
But yeah, reading it as a trade was really good.
Yeah.
So
no, I like it a lot. Yeah,
I read this thing called Good Dog, which is about it's a new Fantagraphics graphic novel that came out, and it's about it's basically about a stray dog who joins a pack of nomadic dogs who are sort of structured like the mafia. About sort of working his way up inside of that structure.
Huh.
And it flashes back and tells stories about the lives of the other dogs and stuff and how they got to where they were. It was pretty crazy and pretty awesome. I'm working on like a teen high school comic. I was like just trying to read some stuff for research. I went back and read the first volume of Blue Monday, which I haven't read since it came out. And it's still really, really, really funny and really great.
Yeah.
By China Clugston Major. It's an old Oni book and it's fantastic, and I recommend that everybody check it out.
There you go.
Yeah. Cool. Well, that's it for this week. This was a really big podcast.
Yeah.
It was really long.
Thanks for taking all this.
All right. Well, that's it. And we'll see you guys next time.
See you.
See you.